It's nice of me to wait and clear my throat after I put this on, isn't it? He was a sinner in misery. His sin had found him out. He is enduring the reward of his deeds. He's lived a life of wantonness, excess, and carelessness. He is dwelling in an earthly hell, a prelude of eternal woe. Remorse has consumed him. He cannot rest. He's troubled day and night. His sin has found him out. And he feels the strong grip of its conviction. He's the thief on the cross. Or did you think I was talking about you? I can remember a time when the sin in my life was so heavy, was bearing down on me so hard. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I would have described it as hell on earth. And the worst thing of all, I couldn't find an escape. I couldn't seem to figure out how to make it go away. Can you remember a time like that in your life? It's got a hold of you and it won't let go. Or more importantly, is that where you find yourself today? Are you a have-not? Have not freedom, have not peace, have not joy, have not hope, have not Jesus. Just like the thief, strapped to the cross, bound by your sin, sentenced to death, hell on earth, an eternal woe awaits you. You see, those thieves up on that cross represent all of mankind. Every man at one point in his life is a thief on the cross. Every man has a choice to make. I want to read today about the thieves on the cross and the encounter that they had with Jesus. In Luke chapter 23, beginning in verse 39, it says, "One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. 'Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us.'" See, that's the one that Jim talked about last week. "But the other criminal, the one that I'm talking about this week, rebuked him. 'Don't you fear God,' he said, 'since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong.' Then he said, 'Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom.'" Both of these thieves were having an encounter with Jesus. Both of them seemed to have had a previous knowledge of who Jesus was, who he proclaimed to be, because they were both speaking. They both knew who Jesus had said he was. Either they had heard him teach directly or they had heard the disciples teach. Somewhere along the line, they had heard the teaching. But the difference in these thieves is in their response. You see, if we flip back a few books in the New Testament, we come to the book of Romans. And there's four verses in there that we call Romans Road to Salvation. And I want to show you today, I want to read those verses to you today, and I want to show you what that thief on the cross was saying as he hung there. The first verse that we come to in Romans Road to Salvation is Romans 3:23. It says, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." Did you hear the thief? He said, "Don't you fear God? You're under the same sentence as the rest of us. You're under the same sentence as Mike. You're under the same sentence as Chuck. And Chuck is under the same sentence of Mike. And Mike is under the same sentence as me. And I am under the same sentence as the thief on the cross. I'm going to die. I have sinned. Every one of us have sinned. And we go to the second verse. It's Romans 6, 23. And it says, "For the wages of sin is death." Did you hear the thief? Did you hear the thief on the cross? We're getting what we deserve. We are sinners. And the wages, we are receiving the rewards of our deeds. And that's what every one of us deserve. And then we go to the third verse. We jump back a chapter to Romans 5, 8. And it says, "But God demonstrates His own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us." Listen to that thief on the cross as he says, "Man, we're getting what we deserve. We're sinners. We're getting exactly what we deserve. But look at this man in the middle. He's done nothing wrong. And he is willing to take the penalty for me." And we flip back to chapter 10, verse 9, and it says that if we confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised Him from the dead, you will be saved. Listen to the thief. "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Man, that thief is confessing that he recognizes Jesus as his salvation. And he believes in his heart that God is going to raise him from the dead because he is going to be in his kingdom. That's all the thief could do. And that's what's so cool about this encounter, because that thief is strapped to the cross. He can't do anything. The only thing he has available is his mouth and his heart. That's all he's got. And God says that's sufficient. If you confess with your mouth and you believe in your heart, you will be saved. And Jesus responds to the thief. He says, "I tell you the truth. Today, you will be with me in paradise." Period. End of conversation. That's all there is. Jesus didn't hand him a checklist of things he needed to go out and do. Jesus said, "I will see you in paradise today." The thief was free. The have-not became a have. The thief could say, "I have peace. I have freedom. I have joy. I have hope. I have Jesus." And I bring that to you today, and we all need to see this encounter, but I know there's a guy in here that the stubbornness of his pride has him believing that he can fix the problems in his life, that he hasn't done anything that bad. He's not like the rest of us. He's not like the thief on the cross. He can right the wrong. And I say to you, look again at that thief on the cross. Look again at him. Better yet, if we could bring a cross up here today and strap me to it. You know, get me strapped to that cross so I can't even reach over and pick my nose. That's a bad day. I can't even pick my nose. And I have all of you stand back and I say, "Now watch. I want you to watch because I'm going to free myself. My name is Brad Houdini. And I am going to free myself from this cross." And you're all going to sit there and say, "There's no way." Because I can see the condition that you're in, and there is no way you can free yourself. There is no way you can make it right. But yet you are blinded by your pride. You don't see your condition, and you think that you can still fix it. And you got to know that you can't. You got to know that there is no hope for you. You got to know that this hell on earth only leads to eternal woe. There is no way except Jesus. And the Bible says He's coming back. And when He comes back, He's going to gather up all of us haves. And He's going to get us all together, and He is going to take us to paradise. And unfortunately, for the have-nots, it's going to be hell on earth, followed by eternal woe. And the freaky thing, He says He's coming like a thief in the night. Two days ago, man, we just saw a horrific thing happen at Virginia Tech. 32 lives abruptly ended. Just like a thief in the night. They had no idea when they got up that morning. You have no idea what's going to happen to you when you walk out of this room today. It's okay that you came here as a have-not, but make sure you leave as a have. You can't walk out. You can't afford to walk out of here as a have-not. There may not be time. And now I want to switch gears a minute, because we've talked about the have-nots, and I want you have-nots to sit there, and I want you to think about that. Think about the decision you need to make. But also in this encounter, there's something that God showed me about the haves. Once we're a have, once we have Jesus, we're free. He frees us. He brings us down. He takes away the penalty of our sin, and He washes us clean. And we're standing here saying, where do we go? What do? And we go to our church. And we come here to huddle. Maybe we go to a Bible study group. And we start doing all these things. And what about the hopeless? What about the have-nots that we left behind? What about them? Do we just forget about them and go do our thing? Well, the Bible tells us to be imitators of Christ. Imitators of Christ. I was watching a John Hagee message the other day, and he was talking about the church in Ephesus. And he said, Ephesus translated means laid back, relaxed, not a concern in the world, just enjoying, hey, it's just coming at me. And he called those people hot tub Christians. And that terminology, that just stuck with me. And I thought about that, and it just kept coming up in my mind, hot tub Christians. And I thought, oh my goodness. We go from being a have-not to a have. And we think we get this little club card that says, you're a have. And you go and you punch that in at your church, and you go in and you get in a hot tub. Because that's what you need, man. That feels good. You've been in a hot tub. It feels good. It's relaxing. It's warm. Just what I needed. And you get in that hot tub and it's full of all your have buddies. And our back is facing the hopeless. We go into our church and we shut the door, and we don't even know, but the little sign on the door says members only. All those hopeless people out there. But not Jesus, man. He never took the time to get in the hot tub. Because, see, he was about doing his Father's work, not about doing what he wanted. He was about doing his Father's work. And his Father's work is huge. It's monumental. Let me just tell you what I was thinking about. 6.6 billion people walking on this earth today, approximately. I didn't go out and take a census, but that's close. Out of those 6.6 billion, they estimate that only 2 billion are believers, are haves. That leaves 4.6 billion have-nots. 4.6 billion have-nots. So as I looked at this encounter with Jesus, and I got this picture in my mind of these two thieves hanging on a cross with Jesus right in the midst of them. Why do you think they had to be so close? Because they had to see clearly the choice that was before them. They needed to see clearly the Messiah. And then it was up to them what they wanted to do. It was their choice. But they needed to see the choice. And so, in my mind then, I'm taking 4.6 billion crosses, because we're all a thief on the cross, and I'm trying to figure out how to arrange 4.6 billion crosses up on that hill so that everyone can see Jesus. They need to see Jesus so they can make a clear choice. Well, after I tried that for a while, I figured out, boy, I don't think I can get 4.6 billion crosses up there. Do you know how many that is? There's like 5,280 feet in a mile. And I estimated the span of a cross at 5 foot. If you set crosses side by side by side, you could get 1,056 crosses in a mile. That's a lot of crosses. There's 24,906 miles in one lap around the world. If you set crosses side by side, by side, by side, by side, all the way around the world, that's 26.3 million crosses in one lap around the world. And we're talking about 4.6 billion have-nots. That equates to 177 revolutions around the world. That's gigantic. That's gigantic. But that's the Father's work, is to draw the people to Him. And we do that through Jesus. I got to thinking about that, and I'm thinking, you know, the man Jesus on the cross, he can see those guys right next to him, but the physical man Jesus cannot see someone down clear around or even 10 or 12 crosses out. They can't get a good enough look at him to know their Messiah. Which is why Jesus said, I have to go be with the Father. I will send the Helper. You will become my hands and feet. You will be the ones who show them Jesus. And here we sat in our hot tub, relaxing. It's nice and warm. It feels good. But not Jesus. As we look at this encounter with Jesus, this is the very last moment of His life. There He's hanging on the cross in agony. The most difficult day of His life. The most difficult day anyone on this earth will ever experience. His mother, the disciples, His friends, standing looking on. I would have thought that when I saw Jesus here, He would be looking down at His mother. He would be looking at the disciples, the ones that loved Him. And He would be drawing comfort and strength and encouragement to endure what He is being put through. That's what I would be doing. I would be trying to figure out what's going to make me comfortable. But not Jesus. You see, in the very last conversation that He ever has here on earth, He's looking over and offering hope to the hopeless. And we're to be imitators of Christ. See, it's hard for us to understand. We're not here for, once we become a have, we're not here for our own enjoyment. We have all of eternity to enjoy the amenities that God is preparing for us. Why do you think He didn't take us to paradise the day we said, "Don't forget me when you come into your kingdom"? Because He needs us here. There's work to do here. We've got all of eternity to be in paradise. You see, Jesus, He did this all of His life. You go back earlier in the book of Luke, chapter 5, and Jesus is walking along and He sees a tax collector there named Levi. He said, "Hey Levi, man, come on, follow me." And Levi gets up and follows Him. And then it says, Levi gave a large dinner at his home for Jesus. Everybody was there, taxmen and other disreputable characters as guests at the dinner. The Pharisees and their religion scholars, or could we say, the hot tub Christians, came to His disciples greatly offended. "What is He doing eating and drinking with crooks and sinners?" Jesus heard about this and He spoke up. Who needs a doctor? The healthy or the sick? I'm here inviting outsiders, not insiders. An invitation to a changed life, changed inside and out. Jesus said, "I'm here inviting outsiders, not insiders." Can I ask you today, as the haves, why are you here? Not why are you here, but why are you here? Why are you using oxygen today? We are to be imitators of Christ. And as I received this assignment, I immediately went to the salvation story and showing how this thief accepted Christ and what a wonderful thing it was. But God took me and put my eyes on Jesus. And He said, "Look at this, man." And I've been convicted because we're not doing enough. It's awesome that we meet here in this room today. Huddle is a wonderful thing. And I have nothing bad to say about it. But we need to blow the walls off of it. And we need to let it flow into the streets. And the have-nots need to see us. We need to offer hope to the hopeless. We need to imitate Christ. Amen.